Hi there. Welcome to Extra Innings, covering all the bases. On Extra Innings, we talk about subjects like mental health, mental wellness, bipolar disorder, depression, and suicide. And we talk about how we deal with the stigma of all these challenges that are universal. My name is Albert Dabba. I am a filmmaker, life coach, and therapist. And I made a film called Extra Innings, which is now on Amazon Prime. And it deals with my family growing up in the 1960s with the disorders within our family. So we talk about all these subjects with people from all over the map who work in all different kinds of professions and have overcome or work with people who overcome or work on doing their best to overcome all these different challenges that we talk about. And one of the main things that I feel is so important is erasing the stigma of mental illness. Tonight on our show, we have a really wonderful guest. We've talked several times. Her name is Natasha Tracy, and she's an award-winning writer, consultant, and has written speaker and has written thousands of articles on mental illness. So, Natasha, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, Albert. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Welcome. We're really glad to have you on the show tonight. Tell us a little bit about your journey, where you live and where you come from, and how did you get into the whole field of mental health, mental illness? We talked a little bit about bipolar disorder over the phone. Tell us about that. We'd love to hear you. Our guests are always very interested in learning about different people's journeys.
Sure. So born and bred in the Pacific Northwest, actually in Canada, which is where I'm calling from today, in British Columbia. And it turns out that my family doesn't have a very good history when it comes to mental health and mental illness. I didn't understand this when I was younger and growing up. But by the time I was about 19 years old, I was suffering from a really drastic depression. And that depression was so severe that I was suicidal and I was self-harming and I was crying all the time for no reason. And I remember what happened to me was I was actually traveling in Europe. I had taken a semester off from university and I was traveling in Europe and I was at this beautiful little tiny hotel in Spain. And I got up out of bed and I shuttered the windows so that the beautiful sunlight wouldn't come in my room. And then I got into bed and I just started to cry. And I cried and I cried. And I realized at that particular moment that if I could be in that amazing place surrounded by these amazing people and be just sobbing in bed, then there was something really wrong with me. But I had no idea what it was. I was brought up to not believe in mental illness. And in fact, I was brought up to think that mental illness was just about, you know, people's own frailty, and depression was about weak moral character. And, you know, all of the stigmatic beliefs that people had, I had them. But as a person who was very severely depressed, I decided that I had to go see a counselor because I actually was concerned I was going to take my own life. And when I saw the counselor, he said to me, "You have to see a doctor." He recognized right away that what I was having was not just mental concerns, but actually a mental illness. And I didn't want to see a doctor. As I said, I was brought up not to believe in that sort of thing. But I was so scared. I was so scared as a 19-year-old. And so I agreed to go see a doctor. And when I finally did actually see a psychiatrist, he did actually diagnose me with a mental illness. Unfortunately, he diagnosed me with the wrong one. He diagnosed me with depression, and actually what I have is bipolar disorder. This is actually a very common thing in terms of getting misdiagnosed. And so I actually knew at the time that it was a misdiagnosis. I told him that I had bipolar disorder. I had done reading, and that's what I came to understand, but he didn't listen to me. And so I was put on incorrect treatments for a couple of years because of this incorrect diagnosis. And myself, I just didn't feel that I could stand up to him because I was 19 and because he was a doctor. So it took a couple of years to get the correct diagnosis and to get put on some treatment that actually was successful. And it was a very long journey for me. It took years to get on a medication that actually helped me at all. And in the end, what I ended up taking was medication that wasn't actually approved for bipolar disorder, but that my then psychiatrist, which was a different one, he said, take this. We think that it might work. There's some upcoming research that suggests that it might. And so I tried it because basically I was desperate and I had tried everything that was supposed to work and it didn't. And it was basically a miracle for me. That particular medication and that guess that my then psychiatrist took was an incredible miracle that actually turned my entire life around. And that was when I started to heal from bipolar disorder. Now, unfortunately for me, my history since then has been really bumpy. As is the case with many people with bipolar disorder, that medication stopped being effective within a couple of years, unfortunately. And then that led to many more medication trials and cocktail trials and all kinds of things looking for something else that would work. And basically what happened was in 2009, I was working at a fancy tech company in the States and I was laid off thanks to reverberations of the 2008 housing crisis. And I had to go back home to Canada, which I did. And when I went back home, I had to get a new psychiatrist because I had been living in the States and I had moved back home again. And I went and was assessed by a psychiatrist there. And the psychiatrist who assessed me decided that I wouldn't get a psychiatrist. That's what she decided. And her reasoning was that I had tried every treatment and they'd all failed. So there was no point in me having a psychiatrist. Unfortunately, this led to a very bad time for me and in fact led to a suicide attempt. After that, I was able to find a psychiatrist who would actually see me. And I did find a cocktail that was effective at that time. So it was around about this time that a friend of mine said to me that I should be a writer. I'd gotten laid off and I couldn't find another job. And I said, I can't be a writer. I don't know anything about being a writer. And he says to me, being a writer is really easy. All you do is print up a business card that says writer on the front of it. So that's what I did. I became a writer at that particular moment. I had been writing unprofessionally for 7 years at that time. And that was how I became a professional, was in that particular moment when I had gotten laid off and I had had the suicide attempt. And then I was finally getting better again. That was the moment that I became a professional writer, advocate, speaker. And basically, I've been running with it ever since.
Wow. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Bipolar disorder, how would you characterize it?
So bipolar disorder is characterized by experience, very elevated periods, and those are known as manias or hypomanias, and then very low periods, and those, of course, are known as depressions. So in order for you to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder, you have to have had both the elevated periods and the depressed periods in order to get that diagnosis. Now, for me, I actually have something called bipolar type 2. Now, in bipolar type 2, you don't suffer from classic mania. Classic mania is what you usually see in the movies and on TV, where the person's running around and they're spending all their money and they're having all this sex and they're doing a lot of things that are very unusual, becoming psychotic, all that kind of stuff. I don't get as elevated as that. So I get something called hypomania, which means mania light, basically. So I'm in that elevated direction, but not to the height of mania. And so that's what makes me bipolar type 2 instead of bipolar type 1. And I do want to mention that while those are the classic mood episodes that people with bipolar disorder face, there is another kind of mood episode, which is a mixed mood, where there are symptoms from the elevated mood and the depressed mood occurring at the same time. And that's actually a very common experience. It's one that I have. And it's actually a very dangerous experience because you get all this energy that you have with an elevated mood, but you have this extreme depression and possibly even suicidality. So it can be a very dangerous combination. So that's a mixed mood, and that happens a lot as well.
Wow. You know, I've often thought about bipolar disorder in terms of my sister, who I don't think was ever diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but in looking over and knowing her, I definitely feel she had bipolar disorder. And, you know, things have changed over the years, just like you're saying, you went to different psychiatrists. I think medications change over the years. New things come up. People, scientists are studying them and the effects of them. So And talking about bipolar disorder, like now, how are you on medication now on a regular basis?
Yes. So today I'm on quite a complex cocktail of medication in order to maintain stability. Unfortunately for me, I am not one of those people who are really lucky and can be on a simple regimen. I'm actually on a fairly complex one, but that's what works best in order to keep me stable and keep me functional. And it is very complicated, but it's something that I have found that works after many years of trial and error.
I see. So you said you're a writer and you've written all these different articles. So, but you said unprofessionally for years. So tell me about that. Like you obviously had a gift, a talent for writing to be able to write professionally, but you were writing unprofessionally. What were you writing? What tell me about that.
So so as all good stories start with, this story begins with a boy.
Okay, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Right. So I was working actually at a tech company, and I met this man who was wonderful, and he was a professional writer. And I thought he was great, and I was really taken with him like the second I met him. And so one weekend, I actually had a cold and I was at home in bed and I couldn't do anything. So I looked him up and it turned out he had this blog and he'd written all this stuff over time. And I read it and it was amazing. He was amazing. And so after reading all this work that he had done, I literally said to myself, I can do that. Which is kind of ridiculous, honestly. It's hubris for me to think that I could do that. But as it turned out, I did start writing and I thought that I wouldn't continue. I thought I would try it and I thought I would set it aside. I didn't think I'd be necessarily brilliant at it. But it just turned out that I actually had a knack for writing. And over time, I just kept writing more and more. I was writing every single day. I couldn't stop. And eventually I was writing about my experience with mental illness primarily. And eventually I started getting comments on the blog, and these comments were from other people with mental illness who had just found me. I was writing anonymously, so no one I knew where I was. No one knew what I was saying. And these people would write to me and say, you know, thank you so much for writing this. You could be writing about me. It was that kind of feedback that made me want to continue.
So basically, you were writing stuff that was relatable to people and you connected that way.
That's right.
Which I think is, you know, fabulous, because that's the way to go. You want to connect with people with your writing. We're going to have to take a break right now, but I'd love to continue on this conversation of writing because it's a wonderful way to express yourself. Thanks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC. Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hi there. We're back with Natasha Tracy. So Natasha, I'd love to hear more about how you got started in writing. You said you had a friend, a guy, and he was writing all these blogs and you felt like, hey, you could do that. So how did, and you started connecting with other people. What were you writing about when you were, writing about yourself and how you felt and bipolar disorder and were you writing about your experiences and stuff like that?
Yeah. So when I started writing, I wrote very raw pieces about my experiences with mental illness. So bipolar disorder and a lot of depression, a lot of suicidality, that kind of stuff. I mean, that was very much what I was writing in those beginning periods, because that's very much what I was experiencing in those periods, was a lot of depression, a lot of suicidality. And I didn't really know how to process it all. But writing gave me a way to actually get those thoughts out and put them somewhere else, right? Get them out of my head and put them somewhere else. And it was not until someone said to me, you know, you're saving people's lives, right? And I didn't believe this person, right? I did not believe him when he said that to me. I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm just writing a blog anonymously online. And then someone wrote to me and said that I had saved their life. My work had done that. And I was so touched. It was the first person to write me and tell me that. And to be honest with you, I've had many, many people write me and tell me that now over the years that I've saved their lives. And that's, I think, the power of writing. When someone can actually see themselves in your words and they can see that you have survived this horrific thing that can be mental illness, you've survived and you are continuing, then it gives them just that tiny bit of hope and that tiny spark that they need to continue forward. And what's important to know is that while people certainly have said that it's me that saved their life, it's not really. What it really is those people finding strength within themselves to move forward and continue. The power, the strength is in those people. It is in all of those people. But sometimes it takes a few extra words for people to find it in themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think when people feel, one of the things that I say a lot and believe in is that when you're feeling a challenge that is really debilitating, you can feel like there's nothing else in the world. You're lost. And living it within my family and at times in my own times where I've been depressed. And, you know, there were times that I thought I would turn out like my brother or sister. And for me, writing the film was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. Is not even saying it right. It was just an experience that I was able to relive and look at what I was writing and look at my family and understand it better, you know, from afar. And then actually shooting the film and then seeing it on film. Like now I haven't watched it in quite a while, but when we were editing the film, and there was a time when we were editing the film, I went to my really best friend and I was really feeling depressed. I go, what am I doing this all for? And, you know, like I felt like I was torturing myself because it was a difficult to just, you know, go in and see it and relive it. And he said, if you can save one life, it's worth it. And it really touched me. And, you know, it was a momentary feeling that I had over a few days that was like, you know, just tough. And but I understand exactly what you're saying is that when you can touch people with whatever it is, what you've written, what you say, like if you do public speaking, so someone could be there, I would think, and just hear a couple of phrases sometimes that could hit them that they can connect with. It's remarkable how people have the strength to dig deep into themselves. Now, it always doesn't always happen that way, as we know, unfortunately. What I wonder is when you decided to keep writing, what motivated you to actually you've written books. So how did you get from writing blogs to writing books?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I guess, you know, I was so driven to write from a personal perspective, just internally, I was really driven to write. And I think a lot of writers are, right? So even if you stopped paying me this exact second, I would still have to write because writers write and it's what they do. And so I felt that pressure to write regardless. And so sometimes I would feel pressure to write about what was going on in my life because I needed the catharsis of actually writing it down. Other times I felt compelled to write for other people to try to explain to them something, you know, a point that I wanted to make or something I wanted to bring forward. But for me, the challenge has never been motivation to write. For me, the challenge has been putting my writing in the right spot, putting it in the right way for people to digest it. And that's how the book came about. The book is called Lost Marbles, Insights into My Life with Depression and Bipolar. And you can get it on Amazon. And it's been very well received. And it takes basically what I've done on the blog and expands on it so that you can get a full sort of a full sense of a subject matter like suicide or like depression or something like that. So I took basically what I had there and then I just filled in all the blanks and so that I could give someone a complete package because, you know, blog articles are great, but you only have a couple thousand words to make a point. You know, in a book, you have a whole lot more space where you can actually say something to people and create almost a movement and a sense of movement within the reader. And that's really what I wanted to do with that particular project. And in fact, I'm working on a second book right now. And it's the goal again, is a movement again in that reader to try to get them to see their illness and new ways to handle that illness. Because learning about the illness is great. And that's the first step. But then the next step is how are you going to take that illness and how are you going to handle it every single day for the rest of your life?
I love the title you have, Lost Marbles. It's a great title. How did you come up with that one?
You know, I was brainstorming for titles over a long period of time, actually, like over a couple of weeks kind of thing. I was thinking about different titles and I couldn't come up with anything that I liked. And so, you know, I had a bunch of suggestions and none of them felt right to me, but I have a dark sense of humor. That's my personal thing. And so when Lost Marbles hit me in the head, if you will, it was, if you will, that's right. Exactly. That just felt right to me because it was like, I actually have a piece in the book and it's very early in the book. And it talks about how our brains are like a big jar with marbles in them. them. And so I use this metaphor to talk about why some people develop mental illness and why some people don't develop mental illness. And I talk about how some people have many marbles in their jar because of genetic factors, and some people have them because of traumatic life experiences, and some people have them because of all these different reasons. And then eventually, if your jar gets full, you lose your marbles. That's the joke. So that's the metaphor, and that's the joke. And so that dark sense of humor is very me. And I wanted to bring that forward because as serious as mental illness is, and make no mistake about it, I take it extremely seriously. I also know that we have to be able to smile at ourselves. We have to be able to laugh. We have to be able to look at it and see, even if it's really dark, a dark humor to it.
Well, you know, I totally agree with you. I think, losing all your marbles is really funny to hear that. But having a sense of humor is so important. I was talking to a good friend of mine who's a comedian, and I may or may not have him on the show, but he says, I don't want to talk about anything personal. And he's a pretty well-known guy in the entertainment field. And I thought, and I know he's got some personal, you know, everyone's got personal issues, you know. And so I thought about it, and I woke up the next morning after talking to him, and I thought, well, you know, and I called him and said, we can talk about how humor helps people. I mean, immensely.
Yes.
How we can be, whatever, whether it's watching a film or going to a club and listening to a comedian. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, depending on who it is and who you are, you can really connect with that kind of comedy, whether it's dark, whether it's slapstick, whatever it is, whoever you are. Like the other night, I just happened to watch regular TV because normally I'll be watching Netflix or Amazon, a movie or something, or sports. I'm a big baseball fan. And I ended up watching back to back Jerry Seinfeld and The Honeymooners. And I was like thinking how hilariously, you know, some of it, how stupid it was, but yet funny. Yeah. And thinking how here I am years later watching shows I've already seen and thinking, oh, my gosh, it's hilariously weird and funny. And knowing what they're going to say, because I've seen it before multiple times. And this is years later. And I'm going, wow. It's great to be able to laugh and, make a fool of yourself at times and whatever it is that makes you laugh and makes other people laugh. So I think that's a great point that I don't know if it's discussed enough in situations where we're talking about mental illness, particularly, just trying to think, but I never heard of a therapist say, do you ever laugh? Or, you know, laughing is really great for you.
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that laughing lightens your soul, right? When you can do it and you can genuinely feel like something's funny, then I do believe that lightens everything in your life for, even if it's a split second, right? I think that that's a huge, like, when you are depressed, if you can get even half a smile, that's a good day.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we'll come back to talking about laughing and how I want to talk more about the whole stigma of mental illness, which is, you know, huge. And we'll be right back with Natasha Tracy right after these commercials coming up. Thank you.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Natasha Tracy. We were just talking about how laughter can heal the soul and just make you feel good. I wanted to ask you about how, because you have mentioned in your bio, and I'm sure what you talk about and what you write about, there's a lot about the stigma of mental illness. And I think, I've heard some people say, well, it's not so much a stigma anymore. And because it's all out there now, people are talking more about it. And it's good that people are talking more about it and people are coming out about it. On the other hand, people are still taking their lives. People still are dealing with depression, dealing with bipolar disorder, dealing with all kinds of anxieties, because life has, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of challenges from wherever it comes from. So tell me what you think and how you deal with when you're talking to people or writing about it, about the whole stigma of mental illness.
There's so much to say on the topic of stigma. And one of the things I'd like to say is that the word stigma and the concept of an anti-stigma campaign is really it's irritating to me, because what I want to focus on, the word stigma is a very loosey-goosey word. Mm-hmm. What I want to focus on is prejudice and discrimination, because that is what people with mental illness face. You know, yes, people talk about anxiety disorders. People talk about depression. That's true. But you know what? People don't talk about bipolar disorder. People don't talk about suicide attempts. People don't talk about self-harm. That is not stuff that people talk about. When you look at mental illnesses, for example, schizophrenia is one of the most maligned mental illnesses. Those people are highly discriminated against. So stigma is a loosey-goosey word for discrimination, which is what those people are experiencing. You know, when you see a person on the street, perhaps, and they're talking to someone who you can't see, but that person is having a conversation with someone that you can't see, are you scared? That's my question. Are you scared? Now, my answer is no, I'm not. I understand very well what mental illness is. And I can tell you that that person who's having a conversation with someone you can't see is likely more scared than you will ever need to be. I can tell you that right now. But many people would look at a situation like that and think that that person is a danger to them. This is not true. People who are experiencing psychosis, for example, are not a danger to you. But there is a perception that they are. There's a perception that because I have bipolar disorder, I'm going to become violent or abusive. I have never been violent or abusive one moment of my life. And so it's that perception. So when people say, oh, people are talking about it and it's out in the open, people are talking about it. And that's really great. But if you ever want to kill a dinner party conversation, tell them that you've attempted suicide. Like, this is not something that people talk about. And it's, and they don't talk about it in a real way. So some things are being talked about. That's great. But we need to talk more, and we need to talk more forthrightly about what the experience is like. You know, someone saying that they have depression, we can identify with being sad. But the experience of having depression is so much more than just being sad. That is one of a myriad of effects that you have when you're actually depressed. You have the inability to make decisions. You may have insomnia. You may overeat. You may undereat. You may have suicidal plans. There's a whole list of things that are going on for a person with depression beyond simply being sad. So what are people talking about? The experience of sadness that doesn't change. That's okay, but that's a tiny, tiny part of what a mental illness really is. So what my job is to try to illuminate the spectrum of what the experience of having a mental illness, and particularly in my case, a very serious mental illness, really is like. That's my job, and that's what I think defeats the concept of stigma and this prejudice and discrimination.
So in suicide attempts, let's say, when people have a suicide attempt, I had one situation that I thought if I take all these pills, I could end this. It was a breakup. I could end it all right now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, but I had the thought, and it was the only time I ever had that thought. And you know, I had pills to sleep, and I felt, let me just take the whole thing, but I didn't. But I had that thought, and it was really the only time I had that. And I knew I was in a situation that I saw this was happening. This woman was breaking up. But I don't know. I mean, I saw my own brother try to take his life once, and unsuccessful. I didn't see it, but I saw the after results. He went in front of a car and got hit. But then when he did finally take his life, he took all his pills and I found him. So when you survive that attempt, like for yourself, how did you feel?
Well, first of all, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that experience. It's Thanks. Tragic. For you and for everyone involved in that situation. So my heart goes out to you for that. Now, when it comes to my own suicide attempt, my belief is that suffering plus hopelessness is what tends to bring about suicide. So it's the idea that your suffering will never end. That's what brings about suicide. It's this hopeless feeling. Your suffering is so severe and your suffering isn't going anywhere. That's what brings about a suicide attempt. That's what brought about mine. And that's what tends to bring about people's suicide attempts, is the idea that their suffering will never end. And believe me when I tell you, it is a grave suffering. It is not mild. It is not stubbing your toe. It is severe and it is soul crushing, the pain and suffering of having depression. And so that hopelessness that tells you it will never end, that's what does it. And for me, I was in a very bad place in my life. And as I mentioned earlier, I was told I wasn't allowed to have a psychiatrist, that no psychiatrist would see me because I was hopeless. And so I knew that if I couldn't get a psychiatrist, then I couldn't get treatment. And if I couldn't get treatment, then I couldn't get better. And if I couldn't get better, then there was absolutely no point in going on. That was my train of thought at that time. And so when I woke up from my suicide attempt, it was like a flash of light hit me. And I said in my head, it was, that woman's wrong. That woman who assessed me is wrong. I need a doctor. She's wrong. Like, that was what it took me being at that lowest of low points to actually get to the point where I was prepared to stand up for myself and say, no, that's not right. I need a doctor. And I took proactive steps to make sure that I could get a psychiatrist at that time. But certainly people who have attempted suicide have many experiences of doing that. Sometimes people feel instantaneous regret with a suicide attempt. I can't say I felt regret. I actually didn't. All I felt was positive forward motion. That's what I felt out of my suicide attempt, but it varies dramatically from person to person. But what I will say is that if you do attempt suicide and you don't change something, if something in your life doesn't change, if you don't get treatment, if you don't get a new doctor, if you don't get a new assessment, if you don't get something that is different and new, you're headed for another suicide attempt. Because that suffering that drove you to a suicide attempt is going to keep driving you until you make a change and do something different. And that's much easier said than done, no doubt about that. But I do believe that that change is absolutely necessary to point you in a different direction. Because even if you can alter your life by just two degrees, that's all you have to alter it by, that is enough to keep your life. And that's what I want. That's what everyone wants, is to keep your life, change it so that you aren't in that kind of suffering every single day, no matter how bad the suffering is. And I have been there. I know how horrendous it is to live through, but there is always a way through it. And there's always a way to change. I believe this to be true for everyone.
Yeah. I think what happens when people, from seeing it in my own family, two suicides, is that it got to the point for both of my brother and sister where there was no hope anymore. They came to that point where nothing will change the way they feel. Dr. Reidenberg, when I had him on the show and other times when I've spoken to him, we've talked about the whole idea, because there are people that say, oh, it's a selfish act. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, it's not a selfish act. It's an act of, it's like, think of it. He said, think of it as like a hammer pounding on your head hundreds of times, and you just can't take that pain anymore. And that's how he described it, very visually, I felt. And I really believe in that from my own vision. And I never felt it selfish. I think, you know, people who have not been around it or don't have the sensitivity to understand that what that kind of suffering is like. So I've was able to see it firsthand and experience it through the family and all that. And that's what I think is important. What you're doing is so important. The writing, talking to people about your own experiences, and people writing you back and telling you how whatever they say, and if they say that you saved their life, that's wonderful to hear. I just had a client I work with, and he went through a really tough time in his life. He lost his wife in a fire, and his house and everything. And he's coming out of that deep depression. And he asked me if I would write something to him to get a dog,
emotional service animal. Yeah,
service dog. Mm-hmm. And it was just wonderful that I felt it was just a great letter he wrote me to ask him to write my, credentials, and so he can get a dog like that. Anyway, we'll come right back. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back with Natasha Tracy with all this great information. Thank you.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Natasha Tracy. One of the things I thought during the break was we were just talking about how suffering can get so bad for someone where they have those thoughts of taking their life and they don't see any chance of hope at all. And you talked about the name of your book, The Lost Marbles, and how you had different titles and stuff. And I love the title. When I wrote my film, I had a working title that I was never happy with. And then one day I took this, I had studied a lot of acting, and I was taking this 4 or 5 day seminar on learning about how people see you. It was only about 8 people over 4 full days, and we had homework at night. And at the end, the 2 guys that led the seminar over the workshop over the 4 days said they came out with what they called your essence. And they came out with different ones, but they would have one main one of what they felt your essence was. And for me, it was, you know what I love, extra innings. And then they explained it. And, you know, when I first heard it, I was, what? You know? But I had, each one of us had to do some homework and come back with an amazing experience they had. So when I was 12 years old, I was a big baseball fan. I learned baseball from my older brother. And I went to a doubleheader, Met Giant doubleheader. It was on Memorial Day when I was 12 years old. And the first game was 9 innings, a regular game. And the second game, back then they'd wait a half hour and then play the second game. It went 23 innings. And I was only 12 years old. And I think I stayed till about the 17th. And I figured I better get home already. And I got home just now. I ran to the TV and I saw the last out in the 23rd inning. So I told the whole story in great detail because I went back into the box scores and I looked at it and I really had it in my head and reminded me of it. And it really comes from the sense of in baseball is not regulated by time. It's regulated by after 9 innings. I don't know if you know baseball or not, but it's like who has more runs. And if it's tied, it goes into another inning. And it can go, I think the longest game, I'm not even sure, maybe 28 innings or something like that. But for me, it was like hope. There's always hope. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is now in baseball, because of COVID last year, they changed the rules where if it goes into extra innings, they put a runner on second. And it's like an artificial way to kind of get the game over faster.
Right.
And it pisses me off. The Yankees played one last night. I'm a big Yankee fan. It's just because I played adult baseball with really great players up until maybe 5 years ago. And we would do that. And it made sense because I'm playing with guys in their 50s, 60s, 40s, 70s even. So you don't want to play there for 4 hours, you know. But these guys are in their prime of their careers, and they're. But it's something that it's my own thing. I'm sure there's other people that feel the same way. But I think I mentioned it because about hope, and I really think that if we can touch on hope by whatever it is, by you know engaging with someone and having some great laughs, and really can turn the switch. And it might be just for a while, but then, you know, you, like you said, I think it's so important is you have to make a change. Mm-hmm. If you go through your suffering and you feel like you're going to take, if you attempt suicide and you get through it and you live through it, you're going to have to make a change to keep going. So I really feel like what you're saying makes total sense to me and hopefully total sense to other people out there who may be thinking, thoughts of whether suicide or just feeling depressed or by whatever it is. I think there's so many challenges in life and you never know what's going to happen next, but that's also the exciting thing about life.
I think what you said is exactly true, which is you never know what's going to happen next. Now, depression will tell you that you do know. Depression will tell you that you are in pain and you will be that way forever. It tells you that. It tells you that every minute of every day. But what you said is correct, which is you really don't know. You really don't know what's coming. So if you can remember that and try to maintain some curiosity about what's coming next, that actually can really help on a day-to-day basis and say, I know it feels like this pain is never going to end. That's a real feeling and it's horrendous, but tomorrow something new may happen. And I truly believe that something new will happen when you have time and when you wait it out. You made a lovely analogy talking about extra innings. Sometimes life needs to go into extra innings before you get the result that you need. And that's why you have to live to see that. I wrote an article about what would have happened had I have killed myself when I originally became suicidal in my 20s. And I talked about how, you know, I never would have done a skydive, right? I ended up doing 150 skydives in my 20s, right? I never would have done that. I never would have gone to Venezuela and flown with the eagles.
Did you say 150?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I never would have flown with the eagles in Venezuela, which I did under a paraglider. You know, I never would have done all of these different life experiences that depression told me I would never have. Depression told me I would be in pain and suffering forever. And, you know, it just turns out that depression is a liar. Depression is wrong. When that suicidal feeling comes around and it's real, it's lying to you. It says there's no hope. It says you'll be like that forever. But that's a lie. And that's what I think people need to remember. You know, I have, I've written a book in the last 10 years. So since the day that I attempted suicide, I have done so many new things that I never would have had a chance to do. And I would have not had a chance to affect so many people that I have now had a chance to speak with and make a difference for them. I wouldn't have had that opportunity had I have died that day. And so while it's very hard to talk back to depression, you have to. You have to tell it that it's a liar and you have to say, you know, a year from now, I'm going to look back on this and I'm going to see that something changed, something was different. And eventually it comes to that. That's, you know, that's what will happen. But, you know, you have to make a change. You have to do something. But eventually you will look back and realize, had you have, you know, actually died, there are so many things you would have missed.
You know, I loved what you had just said. And you used the word curiosity. I think, you know, when you lose your curiosity, you're losing a huge sense of what's out there. And you really have, in this last almost hour or so, really have given me something really beautiful of just your optimism and I don't even know if optimism is the right word, but it feels very optimistic to hear you talk about, no, depression's a lie. You know, all these things are, you're lying to yourself. You're feeling something and you're getting all swelled up inside. And I think the whole idea is, like you said, you have to make changes. You have to see that you can make changes. Like, you knew you needed a psychiatrist. You knew you needed it. And sometimes it's hard to speak back to people, especially when you're younger. But even when you're older, at times you always feel like someone knows more than you. You can feel that way because they have a title or they're this or that. So I want to thank you so much for what you've added to the show tonight, because I think your information and your insight into mental illness or just human life is so important for people to understand. Because whether you never get depressed or you do get depressed, it's important for people to really be kind to others and try to empathize with others. So we're going to be ending the show, and I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And let people know real quickly where they can find you.
So you can find me online at natashatracy.com. And at my website there, you'll see that I'm on all the social media sites. So Natasha_Tracy on Twitter and Natasha_Tracy_writer on Instagram. I'm pretty much everywhere. So go to natashatracy.com and check out. There's, I think, about 700 articles on mental illness on that website that you can access for free. I've also got on-demand masterclasses. There's information about my book. There's so much information that I can give to you that I think will help. So I hope people go there.
All right. I'm sure they will. And Extra Innings is on Amazon Prime. Good night and be well and have a great evening. Enjoy. Thank you again.
Thanks, Albert.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Sam Lip.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Howdy, hey, Joseph. Mr. Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.